Homeland Security was created in 2021 for agencies that carry out immigration enforcement. I want to repeat that, $333 billion for immigration enforcement and for ICE and Border Patrol and fences. And what do we have? The highest level of migrant crossings in history are occurring right now. All that money did nothing to slow the migrant flow. So obviously, it's sort of like money for prisons. It's wasted money.
Juan, we want to thank you so much for the report. We're going to link to it, the current migrant crisis, how U.S. policy toward Latin America has fueled historic numbers of asylum seekers at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
Fall Membership Drive is almost over. We invite you to become a member right now by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. Contribute during this last week of the drive, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of donors. So hurry and join the KBOO family today and help us meet our $55,000 goal at kboo.fm/give. Together, we can do it.
From applicant tracking systems to chatbots to facial recognition, artificial intelligence is transforming our world for the better and also for the worse. Tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. starting November 2nd for The Imaginary Possible, a show that looks at the captivating potentials and the troubling realities of artificial intelligence today. Only on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Before we go to the evening news, we would like to thank the most recent donors to our fall membership drive, Jason D., an anonymous donor, Susan P., and Margaret M. We thank you, and you can join these generous donors by going to kboo.fm/donate or texting KBOO to 44321. And now, your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Republicans trying to thwart ballot measure 113 approach the state Supreme Court.
U.S. House Republicans finally elect a speaker.
And in international news, Gaza conditions significantly worsen.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Oregon Supreme Court will hear arguments from five Republican senators who are trying to overturn a decision barring them from running for re-election in the Oregon Senate. The senators are banned from running again because of ballot measure 113. That's the 2022 law that disqualifies legislators from re-election if they are absent from 10 or more sessions without permission or an excuse. The absences happened earlier this year during the six-week Republican walkout from the Senate. Ballot measure 113 passed with 68% of the vote. It was promoted as a way to disqualify legislators who skip sessions in order to try to block legislative action. The senators are arguing there's a loophole in the law that allows them to run for one more term. Earlier this week, a legislative panel of two Republicans and two Democrats ruled against a different appeal from senators who walked out. That panel found that Senate President Rob Wagner, a Democrat, did not create a hostile work environment or retaliate when he denied excusing the absences of two Republican senators during the walkout earlier this year. The state Supreme Court said it will fast-track the case, which means that they will probably reach a decision by the deadline to file for office, March 12, 2024.
House Republicans have at long last elected a speaker. Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana became the 56th Speaker of the House today after 3 weeks of Republican infighting. Johnson is a Trump ally. He was a key player in the legal argument to overturn the 2020 election. He's also a religious conservative who has supported a nationwide abortion ban and opposed LGBTQ rights. Oregon Republican Representative Lori Chavez de Remer was a key voice he had to win over. In a statement, she called Johnson a, quote, consensus candidate, saying, quote, "The American people and our allies around the world are relying on us to come together and demonstrate that we're able to govern responsibly. I'm hopeful that Speaker Johnson will work effectively with all sides of the conference to advance common sense, pragmatic legislation that is good for our state and our nation," end quote. Chavez de Remer previously voted against Jim Jordan for Speaker and opposed ousting former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Now Speaker Johnson faces a looming government shutdown if Congress can't pass a spending bill before November 17th. He's pressing for an aggressive schedule of votes, since 3 weeks have been lost without a Speaker. The first resolution passed was one in support of Israel today.
A proposed hydroelectric storage project in the Columbia River Gorge could bring renewable energy to the Northwest. But critics say it will impact sacred sites for tribes in the region. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Critics say a proposed hydroelectric project in the Columbia River Gorge could damage cultural resources for nearby tribes. The company Rye Development has proposed building a pumped energy storage facility in south-central Washington state. Pumped storage uses two reservoirs at different elevations to generate and store power. Simone Anter with Columbia Riverkeeper says the Goldendale Energy Storage Hydroelectric Project would be the largest of its kind in the Northwest. It would require excavation to build two big pools, as well as structures underground.
So we're talking about a huge development and digging that would destroy archaeological sites as well as cultural resources.
The Yakima Nation has opposed past attempts to build pumped storage in this area and is opposing this project because of the potential impact on culturally significant tribal sites. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation also says the project could impact access to their cultural resources in the region. Rye Development says the project will bring renewable energy to the Northwest without requiring the building of more dams. But Anter says the project shouldn't be considered green because of its impact on sacred sites and already burdened communities.
If we want to have a just clean energy transition, we must listen to the concerns of impacted communities and work together on siting instead of full steam ahead like we have done in the past with other energy projects.
Anter says the project still needs licensing and approval at the state and federal levels. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Oregon Department of State Lands has started using some of its new funds to remove hazardous and derelict boats in state waterways. Oregon has hundreds of derelict and abandoned vessels in its lakes, rivers, bays, and oceans. In June this year, the Oregon legislature allocated more than $18 million over 2 years to the department. This is the first time state lands has had a fixed budget. Chris Castelli is acting director of operations for the department. He said of the abandoned boats, quote, "They contaminate water, they damage habitat, they damage the property, and they impede navigation," end quote. He added that the state tries to hold owners responsible for cleanup, but that isn't always possible. A project this month near Astoria saw the removal of an 86-foot former fishing vessel in the Columbia River that had housed a meth lab. The state lands department also recently set up a work group that will decide how to prioritize cleanups. That group will make recommendations to the 2025 state legislature. The money that the state allocated to the lands department came from part of a major 2022 legal settlement between Oregon and the Monsanto Corporation over water pollution and PCBs. The biggest derelict shipped on the Lower Columbia River is the USS Washtenaw County, a 400-foot-long Vietnam War-era tank landing ship, which is sitting on a side channel near Rainier.
A Florida student activist from the Tampa Five will speak tonight at the Reed Student Union. Gia Davila is one of five students from the University of South Florida who is facing 5 to 10 years prison time after protesting Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' racist attacks on education. In March, the Tampa-based Students for a Democratic Society held a rally in defense of diversity in higher education, specifically in response to Florida House Bill 999. They marched into a campus building and demanded to speak with the university president. They were then attacked and arrested by campus police. Video footage from the protest shows campus cops throwing the young women to the ground, groping them, and putting one in a chokehold. The university has stood by the police response, and the activists now face between 5 and 10 years in prison for felony charges. Their story has sparked support from groups around the country, raising money for their legal defense. Davila will be speaking at the Reed College Gray Campus Center tonight at 7 p.m.
House Republicans struggled to reach a consensus on a speaker. A third Trump attorney pleads guilty in the Georgia election interference case, and dozens of states sue Meta, formerly Facebook, for harming children's mental health. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If you support the MAGA agenda, if you support the conservative agenda, if you support a Republican majority agenda, we have to have a speaker.
Congressman Andy Barr of Kentucky tells CNN that electing a Speaker of the House is not a personality contest. 3 weeks after the unprecedented removal of their leader, Republicans lack a nominee capable of getting the 217 votes to win the gavel. Earlier Tuesday, GOP whip Tom Emmer of Minnesota emerged as the latest frontrunner, but soon ran into familiar resistance from far-right lawmakers and dropped out of the race. Opponents, including Representative Jim Banks of Indiana, cited Emmer's vote to certify the 2020 election and his support for a bipartisan debt ceiling deal.
I can't go along with putting one of the most moderate members of the entire Republican conference in the speaker's chair.
In truth, Emmer has a very conservative record, but he was still opposed by Trump, who said voting for Emmer would be a tragic mistake.
I said there's only one person that can do it all the way. You know who that is? Jesus Christ. If Jesus came down and said, I want to be speaker, he would do it.
Meanwhile, the House remains paralyzed with a government shutdown looming and legislation providing aid to Israel and Ukraine on hold. Former campaign Trump lawyer Jenna Ellis has pleaded guilty in the Georgia election racketeering case. Ellis was a member of the so-called elite strike force team working to overturn Trump's loss in the state.
If I knew then what I know now, I would have declined to represent Donald Trump in these post-election challenges. I look back on this whole experience with deep remorse.
Ellis is the fourth Georgia defendant to enter a plea deal. Former Trump attorneys Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbrough are agreeing to testify against Trump. Dozens of states are suing Meta for harming young people's mental health. New York Governor Kathy Hochul says it knowingly designs addictive features on Instagram and Facebook.
Our children are in crisis, and it's up to us to save them.
A Surgeon General's report finds children who spend more than 3 hours a day on social media are twice as likely to express depression and anxiety. New federal legislation would block a tax break for the cost of legally suspect union-busting tactics. Elena Lopez with Communications Workers of America says companies spend millions on consultants who often threaten workers for unionizing, then claim the payments as a write-off.
Companies are actively breaking the law, and they're being rewarded for breaking the law.
And the Georgia Supreme Court has ruled the state's 6-week abortion ban is constitutional and will remain in place for now. Georgia is among 12 states that have put in so-called heartbeat bills since Roe v. Wade was overturned last year. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
For people flying into Portland International Airport, there's been a change. Taxi and rideshare vehicles will no longer be available on the main road in front of the PDX terminal, but can be found on the first floor of the short-term parking garage. Airport officials say this change means there will be a million fewer vehicles in front of the terminal in a year's time. Private vehicles can still come to the terminal to pick up people, and there is no change for those departing Portland. Last weekend, the MAX Red Line started airport service again after being offline for construction for 4 months. Renovations to the main terminal, including a 9-acre wooden rooftop, should be completed by May of next year.
International news. Conditions in Gaza continue to worsen. A UN Relief and Works Agency spokesperson said, quote, "We need to find a solution to the fuel. Otherwise, our aid operation will come to a stop," end quote. Nearly 600,000 people who have been displaced from their homes by Israeli bombardments are sheltering in 150 UN Relief Agency facilities that are 4 times over their capacity. Israel has severely restricted fuel shipments, stating fears the fuel will be used by Hamas. Without fuel, water cannot be pumped or desalinated. The scarcity of fuel needed for hospital generators has already forced six hospitals to close. Poverty eradication nonprofit Oxfam accused Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war against Gaza civilians, saying the enclave was receiving just 2% of its usual supply of food. With Israeli airstrikes ongoing, over 6,500 people have been killed in Gaza since October 7th, including over 2,000 children. Israeli military forces continue to prepare for a ground invasion of the territory.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his new article tackling the backlash to Oregon's drug decriminalization measure 110. At 6, it's the Halloween special of the Underground. Then at 7, PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Tonight's weather will show rain with a low of 43. Tomorrow's weather will have clouds early with some sunshine expected later. The high will be 54. Today in history, in 1983, the United States and allies invaded Grenada. Prior to that, in 1957, Nancy Cartwright, Emmy Award-winning actress and voice of Bart Simpson, was born. The quote of the day is from Bart, who said, "I can't promise I'll try, but I'll try to try."
The Federal Energy Department is investing $3.5 billion in expanding capacity for wind and solar power. Navajo Power says it's a huge opportunity. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Studies show the nation's aging power grid is not ready to handle the energy shift from fossil fuels to renewables. The U.S. government hopes a historic investment will fix that. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
The Department of Energy is spending $3.5 billion on efforts like expanding capacity for wind and solar power, and building microgrids that keep the lights on during power outages. Money will also go toward hardening power lines against extreme weather and wildfires. That's led by a $100 million investment in high-risk areas across more than a dozen states, including Colorado, Idaho, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. Margaret Talmadge is with Navajo Power, a Native-owned developer of renewable energy projects.
This provides an enormous opportunity for us to address transmission congestion, outdated transmission leading to wildfires, a huge opportunity to support renewable energy development in Indian country.
She says it's also a chance for tribes to receive the revenue and economic benefits of their projects. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
A Lakota family in northwestern Nebraska was the recipient of a six-figure settlement following a court battle. The case circles a 2021 incident involving the Johnson Leroy family in Cherry County, Nebraska, just south of the border of the Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations. Two of the family's children had their hair cut by school staff, which sparked the discrimination suit. Nebraska state law prohibits discrimination in public schools based on a student's tribal regalia or long hair. The family was represented by the ACLU of Nebraska and the Harvard Law School Religious Freedom Clinic. The suit ultimately sparked change in the Cody Kilgore School District as well, including the recognition of Indigenous Peoples Day and Native American Heritage Month. Further, changes are to be made to the district's student and employee handbooks to note no student's hair should be cut without consent from parents or guardians. Native American Bank has been chosen to administer $50 million in grants from the U.S. Treasury Department to bolster low-income Native American community projects and businesses in Plains states, including Montana. Mark Moran reports.
The Treasury Department has given Native American Bank the authority to invest in disadvantaged indigenous communities that often lack access to the capital they need to start and maintain viable, sustainable businesses on tribal reservations or other American Indian-owned land. Joel Smith with the Denver-based Native American Bank says in northern Montana, the investments will show up in the construction of community service facilities on and around the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in Browning.
So we're looking at a lot of healthcare clinics, wellness centers, behavioral health or opioid recovery centers, in addition to childcare and schools.
The $50 million is part of a larger $5 billion federal investment designed to spur economic growth in low-income urban and rural communities nationwide. Smith says this federal investment will fill the gaps that remain on Indian land that currently aren't covered despite bank and grant funding.
But when you layer this on top of it, get the project across the finish line. So in that regard, it's one of the most impactful things because it's making projects happen that really would not otherwise.
In addition to new and much-needed community services, Smith adds the investment will also create jobs in the communities where these facilities are built.
That was Mark Moran, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Social Security is an important benefit for older Americans. But if Congress doesn't start working on a solution now, the program could be cut for the next generation of beneficiaries. Eric Tegetoff reports again from Idaho.
Social Security is a critical benefit for older Americans. That's why advocates want Congress to start working now to ensure the program is maintained for future generations. Suzanne Nesbella is a volunteer with AARP Idaho. She traveled to Washington, D.C. to celebrate 88 years of Social Security and also explore ways to ensure the program doesn't experience a shortfall. Nesbella says reserves for the program will be depleted within the next 10 years.
At that point, if we don't make some changes, there's a chance that there will be a 20% cut to those who are receiving Social Security. So we're just trying to get the conversation started to work on a plan to help resolve that.
More than 370,000 Idahoans receive Social Security benefits. For many, it's a big source of their income as they age. The benefits make up more than 90% of income for more than 45,000 Idahoans age 65 or older. Nesbella notes that everyone benefits from Social Security.
Even for those who have pensions, many of them rely on that. Some of the folks that are getting pensions now, relative to the cost of living these days, it's not enough. And so they really do need Social Security.
Nesbella says cuts to the program could be detrimental, especially as the cost of living continues to rise. At the beginning of 2023, benefits increased 8.7% to adjust for inflation. It will get a 3.2% boost in 2024. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
An estimated $5.2 billion was lost nationwide in scams, as reported to the Federal Trade Commission in its most recent report. Another report from AARP says, although scams can befall anyone, older adults are some of the least likely to report being victimized, due in part to the trauma and shame they experience. Farah Siddiqui reports.
Scams and fraud have long-lasting effects on a person's mental well-being, but the latest research says the emotional toll is particularly high on older adults. Half of the victims in fraud cases reported to the Federal Trade Commission were under the age of 30, but the financial losses are greater in older adults at an average of $1,500. AARP says people who get scammed often experience shame and a desire for isolation. That was the case with Keith Gattazzi, who got caught up in a romance cryptocurrency scam and says he felt awful after discovering he'd fallen for someone who did not even exist.
Since I was in cybersecurity all my life, and I'm not stupid, and I don't know, I'm like looking for love in all the wrong places, but I felt like an idiot. I was embarrassed. I didn't tell anybody. I told one of my friends. I didn't tell anybody else.
AARP, in conjunction with Volunteers of America REST program, offers free online facilitated emotional support sessions for fraud victims. REST stands for Resilience, Strength, and Time, and people can attend as many sessions as they'd like. AARP fraud prevention advisor Seth Buffelli says the pandemic and dependence on technology have contributed to much of the increase in scams. Buffelli says it's just a matter of time before any American of any age will be tempted by a convincing scam.
What we need more understanding on is just what we're facing. These are professional criminal enterprises that are master manipulators using technology, the latest technology, to take advantage of us. Any of us could fall victim.
He adds it's key in these cases to stop, think, and verify to prevent falling for a scam. AARP's Fraud Watch Network tracks and posts information about current and common scams online. In some areas, they also teach community education classes, host free document shredding events, and work with lawmakers on consumer protections. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from our resident news poet, Dan Raphael, who's seeing an early winter in more than the weather.
So far, four of Trump's co-conspirators in election fraud have copped pleas and will give more evidence against the others. While Trump's lawyers continue his technique of stalling and countersuing, Donnie keeps showing up at trials because that's where the cameras are. Who wants to be in Iowa or New Hampshire anyway? Meanwhile, far-right Republicans, cheered by DT, have brought an early winter, freezing Congress, hence the federal government, from doing anything. If the Israeli lobby can't apply enough pressure to get Israel and another gazillion dollars in weapons, who can break the ice? Chaos in America and around the world as winter comes in. More people than live in Portland currently homeless and or displaced in Gaza. Some of the money that went unspent to help the homeless here has gone away, while other promises not yet fulfilled. Did I say winter's coming? Nights below freezing in a couple days. Soon we'll smack our clocks back an hour, bringing darkness to dinner time. And hey, it's just October. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Chris Gao. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, Catherine Carley, Eric Galaras, and Farah Siddiqui. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. To those members, thank you. To those considering becoming a member, would you look at that? KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. You can become a member and support our programming by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots, and we're talking about his cover story in this week's paper. It's called Measure 110 Shows Early Success Despite Backlash. Health experts say Oregon should stay the course on decriminalization and treatment. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah. How's it going?
It's good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. So your article takes a look at Measure 110. That's Oregon's drug decriminalization measure and the backlash that it's been receiving since it was passed by voters. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, can you give us a rundown of what the measure does and some of the timeline of the different parts of its implementation?
So voters passed Measure 110 in November 2020 election, and it wasn't until February of 2021 that the law actually decriminalized most drug possession, creating a new Class E misdemeanor, which is a much less harsh penalty than we had previously. And then it wasn't until May of 2022 that funding actually started going out to create treatment centers. That was actually the biggest part of Measure 110, is that it is going to stand up these treatment facilities for drug use and drug treatment programs. And then from May until September of 2022, funding was going going out. This is all over Oregon. There's a big focus on Multnomah County a lot of times, but this is all over Oregon to stand up these culturally specific treatment centers in the interest of harm reduction.
Right. So it takes marijuana tax money and diverts it towards these treatments. So what was the pitch on what the process would be if you were stopped with possessing drugs?
Yeah, so basically, rather than, you know, arresting somebody for possession, they would go in, you would get a Class E misdemeanor violation, which is like a $100 fine. You could get that fine reduced if you went to, you know, through like treatment programs and stuff, and you didn't actually have to legally actually even show up to court necessarily. So it's actually pretty lax law when it comes to drug possession, which is something that opponents like to focus on a lot. Proponents of the measure say that the treatment center is actually like the main piece of this legislation that, like you said, takes the cannabis tax dollars and pays for treatment centers all over the state.
So there's this 15-month hang time that we're going to talk about between when the drug decriminalization part of the measure happened and when the funding started going towards creating these services that were, like you're saying, a big part of the measure. Before we get into that, I want to talk about what has the funding from Measure 110 been able to accomplish so far?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to talk about in there because it's actually accomplished quite a bit. You know, voters passed this with 58% of the vote in 2020. That is at the end of, you know, a time of kind of racial justice protests where a lot of people in the public were thinking about racial disparities in policing. And that seems to have a large effect on, you know, the measure passing. 3 years have passed since then. And, you know, the public kind of views this, you know, differently now. So, but during this time, there is a report that